Hi there, listener. You're about to experience Tadpog. Tyler and Dave play old games, and there will be plenty of game talk, but also copious amounts of crude, off-color, offensive, and immature speech. So if you are of a rather sensitive humor constitution, we're just letting you know what you're in for with this show. It has games. It has jokes. You know, just games and jokes. Take the games, take the jokes, and have a good time.
Hello, Internet. Welcome to another Tadpog podcast. It's a show that happens twice a week where two old guys sit down with two other guys whose age we are not totally certain of. But they're... it's about the same age, probably.
I'm assuming a little bit younger.
Yeah?
I'm assuming a little bit younger, yeah.
I'm assuming a little bit older.
A little bit older?
We'll see.
All right.
We'll
That'll see. Be the first question. How the fuck old are you guys?
Talk about old games. And I'd mentioned last week that we had something special coming up for this Other Ship Monday. So today we have, I guess, the first of its kind, people who actually made a game. Decided they would stoop to our level to let us ask them lots of questions about their game. So if you listen to the show a lot, you're familiar with Color Mage John Sullivan. So he and his brother Mike Bloom have made, and we talked about before, Mario Italiano. So they're here to talk to us about that. Hey guys,
hello,
how you doing?
Yeah, and By you letting us be on here, it's more like I just subtly dropped the hint over the last year and a half until finally you took it. So
that's usually how it works. Usually is.
We're really good about stuff like that.
Hey, you, a year and a half, that's not bad. That's not bad. I feel like there are some people who've been waiting much longer. Sorry, Chris Edler. I do promise I want to get you on the
show. We're
going
to do that pinball episode sometime.
Promise.
Yeah, so I'm 33.
Oh, same age.
Same
as me.
Age.
And I will be 35 in a month.
A little bit older. I was hoping you were going to say 31, but okay, a little bit older.
So did we sandwich you? How old are you guys?
I'm 33.
And I am 31.
Okay.
All right.
So same age as John Turley, though. John Turley just turned 35, right?
Yeah, he's in there.
He's somewhere in there.
Hey, it's your anniversary today, isn't it, Tyler?
Yeah, it is.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
We're talking about birthdays and stuff.
Yeah. It's my 7th wedding anniversary.
All right, man.
Congratulations.
Yes.
But Meg's a priest, so Sunday is like, it ain't falls on a Sunday. It's not fucking happening. So it's like, okay, well, we'll celebrate it later in the week.
I see. So that's how you get away with doing a podcast every week.
at least on for the Monday episodes.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll be home. We're going to do this Sunday, then we can be home tomorrow, but then the next day we're gone again.
I see.
So, yeah, we like to do things last minute. But all right, normally I'm your beard host, Tyler, and I would give like some kind of an intro story here. The only thing appropriate I can think of is I have spent a lot of money buying the base game and every expansion, every map, every color pack, everything for RPG Maker. Mm-hmm. And it is all wasted money. Because I sit down, I'll bring it up, not know what the fuck to do, and then like one in the morning, I'll get really inspired, I'll pull it all up again, and I'll look at like some kind of tutorial about how to use it, and then inevitably I'll just shut it back down again. So the fact that you guys wanted to make a game and then made a game is amazing to me.
Yeah. It was a long road, that's for sure. I don't recommend you make a game unless you have a lot of patience. Maybe if you're messing around with one of those tools. Like, I've never used RPG Maker, but I know even using Game Maker is enough to make you want to pull your hair out.
I want to say that I also have RPG Maker. And with Tyler's description, like, he's gotten, like, 5 steps ahead of me. Because like, here's my thing. By the, I'm Dave, your bespectacled host, by the way. And here's my deal. I just bought RPG Maker and felt satisfied.
Yeah.
Well, my work is done.
Throw that on the eventually list.
Well, you know, my history, I have RPG Maker for like PlayStation 1. I mean, I have like they made a bunch of these RPG Makers for the PlayStation and PlayStation 2. And man, I would mess around with those things for hours only to have like your file corrupted and
I can't imagine
hours of your life.
God, damn you mad cats.
Exactly.
And that makes me feel a little bit better for like losing my Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VIII saves. I think I'd rather lose those than any RPG that I've actually made.
Oh yeah. So what do you want to know about us making a game?
Well, I want to know. I want to know a little bit about y'all's backgrounds, and from those backgrounds, like, did you like are those inherent to making a video game, or was making a video game just kind of something you decided you want to do one day?
You know, Michael, why don't you start with this one? Tell us about your history.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been a comic book nerd for I don't know. Since forever. And I was always into comic books and drawing, and I was big into art in that scene. So, but I also played video games like crazy. So, you know, basically we had, John and I, we've known each other forever. I've actually been with his sister, married to her for 13 years. We've been together since high school. So I've known John since he was really young and I was really young. In fact, we went to grade school together, but, you know, I've always been a gamer and always been a comic book artist. So this made a lot of sense for me to gravitate to, but it definitely wasn't something that I had planned on up until a few years back. And it basically came from a draw for me was because we had developed this comic book together that had been sitting around forever. And I finally said, I need to do something with this. And I had been playing a lot of games similar to what we ended up creating, and kind of dawned on me one day, hey, we need to do this. And then I approached John with it, and he agreed fantastically. I thought he would say no, but he actually agreed to spend this ludicrous amount of time doing this with us. And that's where we ended up doing it. So I would say, yeah, it was probably inherent that I would end up here, but where I was when this started was definitely a very different place. I was actually in sales management for the automotive industry. So it was quite a bit different of a career change to start making this game and devoting that much time to it. So John, I mean, I know he's been an artist forever, but John, why don't you go ahead and give him a little bit of background on you?
Well, I was always the kid, like growing up, I was always the kid who was not very good at video games. You know, I got a Nintendo pretty early, but that was more like so I could convince the other kids in the neighborhood to come play with me. But I wasn't actually that good. And like Michael said, we've known each other for a long time. His grandparents lived on the same block that we did growing up. And we started hanging out in, you know, high school when he started, you know, dating my sister. And there was a lot of gaming that would go on at our house. And another thing is whether or not we were, I guess, going to make a game or not, I think it came pretty apparent that Michael and I would do something together because, as he mentioned, we used to draw comic books together.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael came up with this idea for a mobster-themed comic. And we would sit down and draw this thing. And, like, we wanted to just, like, kind of, like, really hone our craft as artists, and we also really wanted to integrate our styles. So what we would do is we kind of developed our drawing style together because he would draw for hours on a page, and then I would kind of go and finish it, or he would sketch something and I would finish it. And so we really got into this whole you know, kind of like working together. And you know, as far as games though, I mean, even in high school when he was over and playing, I was always bad. I was always the guy who, you know, would kind of fight for time, you know, in GoldenEye and last about 8 seconds and be the butt of every joke for the next couple hours. But then when I got older, I think as some sort of a revenge to my childhood, when I got married around like 25, I started collecting games, old school games, kind of all the games that I sucked at, never really got a chance to play when I was a kid, I started buying up so I could play them now. And so that kind of reignited a whole passion for just gaming in general. And so I think that's why when Michael approached me about turning this comic book world that we had made into a game, I was all about it, because I kind of, you know, I know there's always that debate, you know, games as art, but I'm definitely a believer that video games are art, and the art in them is what, you know, large thing that drives me to play them. So I was pretty stoked on the idea. It was a way for us to kind of take our passions for multiple things and kind of roll them into one.
That's awesome. Style's always like really high on my list. And I think it's really cool that you guys kind of both came in this with like an artistic bend. We haven't really talked about the game itself a lot yet. Tell me about the game. Obviously, it's based on the comic that you guys worked on together. I've played it on my iPhone, and I immediately got the feeling that this was something bigger than the game I was playing. Does that make sense?
Like the world?
Yeah.
Is that what you meant?
Yeah, it felt like there was a lot of background to it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I, as far as like the game itself, I'll really say... just the type of game, like Michael said, he was really playing these, it's a, you know, like a card battle game, a card collecting battle game. And, you know, it really, Michael was all about playing them. So I guess I'll kind of let you take this, Michael, as far as like where the concept of the game is and how you kind of decided to marry the comic book to it.
Yeah. You know, these card battle games, and, you know, whether it's a physical one or a digital one, and a lot of them started popping up on phones and they became really successful. So part of it was me playing these games because they were in everybody's face. And, you know, I kind of thought, well, this is kind of the formula we had. I mean, the comic, just so you know how it's built, is it's built around these four mob families that are all like trying to take over the city, you know? And so there's four separate families that are very distinct and different from each other. And it lends itself to this concept very easily. Usually these card battle games will have, you know, different factions or different families or whatever you call it, different elements or whatever. And then everything has its yin and yang. And this kind of suited itself to that. So knowing that I had had this book sitting there forever, you know, adapting it to this was really inspiring to me. So, you know, so the game, yeah, it's a card battle game. Basically, you, when you start the game, you pick one of the four families and then you go and battle for them. You know, you fight other players. It's very social. You know, you get in there and fight other real people. You can, you know, take on missions to gain experience, any of that other kind of grinding that RPGs lend to. You grind through, you gain levels, you get resources, and ultimately you end up connecting with a bunch of people, and then you can do some of the better features, like we do mob battles daily where you can fight 60 people versus 60 people. You can help each other defeat bosses. You know, it's kind of like a more social version of the typical card battle games you find on the mobile devices.
And I know we, because we're super good at interviewing, obviously, we probably should have mentioned the name of the game.
We've done like eight of these. I said at the beginning.
The full name of the game is Mario Italiano Four Families, right?
That's correct.
And currently, it's available on the App Store, the Apple App Store. Is that right?
Yep, just on the App Store right now.
Are there other plans to release it also on like Google Play? Or I noticed I wanted to play it on my iPad and I was really excited. And I got to the store and I was like, oh, phone only. So I ended up playing on my phone, which wasn't a big deal. But do you have plans to do further releases as well, like on tablets and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. We want to have it on everything we can.
Yeah.
The big kick, you know, this is part of our learning curve. You know, we started with iOS because it's a little bit easier of a development process. When you get into Google, you know, all the Android devices, they vary in screen size, they vary in resolution. Everything is all different, you know. So when you're developing for Android, you're developing for probably 10 different devices.
I didn't even think about that. Oof.
Yeah, you know, with iOS, you got one really device, you know, one software you develop for, and then it scales to everything that they make. The only problem we had with tablets is that we ran into some issues where it would have to, a lot of the things would have to be redone. Any solid screen is cut off because the resolution is different on a tablet. So that was a problem we ran into, which we are trying to redevelop for right now, because it shouldn't be too hard of a fix, but there's just only so much work and money you can put into it at a set amount of time. So yes, we would love to have it on, you know, functional on iPad very quickly. Yes, we would love to do Android, but in the reality of it, just for informational purposes, an Android port alone is going to take probably a year's time and about $50,000.
Wow.
Jesus.
So that kind of leads me to another question. I mean, how did you guys get your funding to create this? I mean, is this all creator-backed, or did you guys do any kind of...
Yeah, until recently, we took a little bit of an investment, and I took a little bit of a business loan. But until then, yeah, it had been all out of my pocket.
Wow. That's amazing.
And the thing is which I guess we could talk about, is, you know, Michael and I... We do not have a programming background, so you know we developed the entire concept of the game. I mean, the whole system, the battle system, the stats, the numbers, the algorithms, all that stuff we developed on pen and paper, but we didn't know how to actually program it. So we hired programmers to actually do all of the coding in the game.
Okay, that's interesting. That's I mean. As a guy who like has only played video games and bought RPG Maker but never opened it, I really had no idea, you know, how that kind of stuff works.
Well, does iOS, does it have its own programming language for everything you want to release on iOS?
Yeah, Objective-C is what you use. You know, so you know, it is interesting because at the time when we started to, you know, develop this concept, I knew I could handle a lot of the game engine stuff and development stuff. And John, you know, John and I worked through all of that. And like you said, we did everything is to the point where I would hire a group, you know, and we went through two different companies for programming because one of them didn't work out so good in the beginning. But you basically go to these guys, you know, and they do the programming for you. Now, you know, that's a nice way to go if you don't know how to do it. You know, I think a lot of people assume when they want to make a game that they have to know or have somebody on their team or payroll to be able to do every portion of it. Well, that's not how we attacked it. You know, John and I knew we could do the gameplay. We knew we could come up with the concepts. We knew we could do all the art and all the design work. So every screen you see, every button, everything was designed by us. Every layout was done, every gameplay feature, every rule was done by us. And then I would just meet with these guys and have them, you know, give them very clear direction, very clear documentation and all the graphics. And they would put it together, you know, in the language. They would basically code the background to everything we built.
I know that you said that this was, the development was a long process. How long did it take? And, I guess I'm really curious is how much of it was time on your end versus time on the programming end.
Yeah, that's, I'd say it's probably 50-50. I mean, if it takes you such and such time to develop a screen, it's probably going to take that much time to program it if you're doing a good job of design. But yes, we were delayed a lot by outsourcing. You know, when you don't have your team in-house and you don't have the guys sit next to you to explain things to instantly, there's always a little bit of lag and there's always sometimes some confusion and sometimes some miscommunication and things might have to be fixed or redone. So it probably was a good amount of time concepting before we even went to these to get programmers. It was a good amount of time designing the stuff, but then yes, it was an equal amount of time, you know, programming it out once we gave it to them.
Yeah, I mean, and there's something always comes up. I mean, one thing that I mean, on the outset, a game like this like looks like it's pretty simple, I guess. You know, there's not a lot of looking at it, it seems like the rules are pretty simple. But I mean, the design doc alone for this game was like the size of a phone book. I mean, true. Just recognizing all of the rules, all of the, I mean, the spreadsheets of stats that we had to provide them with of mm-hmm. like, you know, what a person's hit point was, what, you know, all those sorts of things so that they would program them. And then on top of that, I mean, just because of how many rules and conditions and things like that that we had to set up, the, you know, the margin of error is there. So, you know, a lot of this stuff, like they'll start programming something and then realize like, oh man, like, we can't do it because we need to connect it to this other thing, or, you know, there's all these things that we start to realize that, you know, don't work or would work better a certain way, or, you know, quite possibly they're too heavy for the server to handle. You know, there's just all sorts of things that kind of can put you back.
So, I mean, overall, how much time is in it?
Oh, probably 3 years.
About 3 years.
Three years. Yeah. Wow. That's, I mean, on one hand, that seems like a long time, but on the other hand, I mean, to
it was, you know, for two guys, that's what it's going to take. If we had a team of 20 people or even a small indie team of 10, you know, we were all sitting together, we probably could have cut that in half.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, there's also something to be said that John and I still have full-time careers outside of game dev and, families to take care of. So most of this work in the initial 2 years was done at, like, you know, between the hours of 11 and 2 in the morning when we could finally free up the time to do it.
Uh-huh. I was about to ask when you guys slept. I mean, have you slept in the last 3 years?
Even the last 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Lately it's been a little bit better, but no, I mean, I don't think I've slept more than 5 hours a night. I mean, at all since we've started this thing. I can't think of a time. Because happens is, and it becomes such a part of your life, there's definitely this balance, because not only do you have to have, like, work-life balance, but then on top of it, you have to have, like, work-life balance. Sure. So you're, like, juggling these two separate jobs. And, you know, I have 3 kids. Michael has 2 kids. And,
you should teach him the program.
Trying to keep your wife happy. That itself can be a full-time job. But, you know, it's one of those things that just becomes such a part of your life that, I mean, as we've launched the game here recently, and I mean, we're revamping some things, and we have lots and lots of stuff in store. Well, that crazy rush where we were always behind the eight ball for the last 3 years has kind of slowed up for the first time, and it's like, I find myself almost more overwhelmed now that I don't have 1,000 things to focus on, that I only have like 3 or 4, that it's almost like I have to like readjust to my life outside of just the insane hustle and bustle of just trying to squeeze every minute out of every day.
Sure. I can't even imagine. I mean, I remember when Tyler and I started doing this podcast, I thought it was a big adventure. And then now it's just kind of like, well, I mean, we do this thing. It takes like 6 hours a week. But like to hear you guys talk, it's like, well, that's an actual actual journey that you guys are taking.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Because we've talked about like, we should do a game. Yeah.
I mean, we both have RPG Maker. Yep, one of us has never.
You gotta do a game, man.
After this, I doubt we'll ever have that conversation ever again.
We'll just like look at each other in silence.
Well,
I don't know.
You just gotta wait for us to keep making games so we can keep putting you in them, and then you can just kind of live vicariously through us.
It's a lot
easier to beat in a game than it is to make a game.
Yeah, because we should bring that up because the first. First time we really heard about it, John, was you told us, you're like, hey, you're making a game. I want to put you guys in it. Is that okay? How about So then you sent us the art, and it was like, let's do this.
Yeah, I think we remember reaching out to you, and I think we gave your character all the backstory you wanted, except I don't think we gave them cat magic.
No, we might have, man. I'm pretty sure I wrote something like that in there, buddy. I'm pretty sure cat magic is in there, man. It's probably in the mission descriptions too.
I just remember reading that, and I was like, because you know we actually have a couple people in the game, and like everybody I asked for a description, you know, everyone we asked for a description, it's like, oh yeah, make me a guy who deals with knives, and you guys were like, we need cat magic. Like, that's an interesting request. I think we could come up with that.
Well, that was a real honor. That was the first time I've ever personally been asked if I wanted to be in a video game. So that was a really cool treat.
Well, we figured it was, you know, the thing is I listened to your podcast for so long. Like I mentioned to you guys before that I've been listening since episode 3.
That's a long time.
It's become quite a part of my, you know, like I look forward to it. And then I remember the excitement when you guys started doing 2 shows a week. And so, you know, I listened to it. So, you know, I listened to it mostly in my car, as I'm sure you've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes I would also put it on while I was, you know, working on this stuff at night. So
that's one of the things I love about podcasts, because I do the same thing. I put it on when I work all the time.
You don't listen to us with all like your kids in the room?
No. One time I think I listened while my wife was in the car, and that'll never happen again.
Yeah.
I think it was the Shao Kahn Marriage Rapture.
Hey, that's
episode.
A good one.
Yeah.
My wife could not quite wrap her head around what the heck you guys were talking about.
Because I think the first time we ever heard from you was you did art for Shaq Fu.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know who this guy is. This is awesome.
And John, you sent me those prints of video game characters. I think in hopes that I would send them out to listeners, and then I got them, and I was like, no, I'm keeping these.
Yeah,
these are too good
exactly
to like give to. So,
but at least you were honest about it. You know? At least you didn't hold some imaginary raffle on Tadpog and then just be like, well, we announced our winner, and then just keep it for yourself.
We have not heard, because we used to give out stuff for 5-star iTunes reviews and randomly pull one. We never heard back from like anybody who ever won.
So really? People,
yeah. Tyler Dunnigan wanted his copy of Model Land
that he
won.
Which is still sitting on your shelf.
He came over here like 2 weeks ago and he didn't take it. So I guess that's mine. That's my one-penny Amazon purchase. So
nobody got their Goosebumps books?
Okay, you're right. Paul Korn. We did meet Paul Korn in Nashville and we gave him the signed copy of my really shitty Goosebumps number 1 held together with scotch tape. Goosebump book, but I still have a stack of all these Mario Galaxy coins and like
from Matt's Fat Vacus,
Halo, like all sorts of shit we'd play on. This, nope, okay, nobody wants them.
Yeah,
no one wants to send us their address. These two guys talking about dicks on the internet. It's fine.
Oh yeah, that address I gave you guys was fake. Just saying.
where in the game can you find Tadpog?
Michael, where are they?
They're in Tolkuchka. They're in Tolkuchka, which is the Russian flea market in the North Point section. So if you go into Tolkuchka, which is a region in the north, and you will find you as one of the property bosses, and you'll have to play through your little mission and then fight you. And if somebody is tough enough to beat you, then they get to play as your card.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you start the game, you can choose of 4 different bosses. You want to choose the north side, Beano Biggs, and that's the easiest way to get your card.
So if anybody, since we're talking about shit we haven't given away, so if anybody plays Mario Italiano, gets our card, and takes a screenshot of them playing our card, and wants to give us their address, I'll send you a Mario Galaxy token. Got him over here.
All right. Nice.
Okay.
I like that.
I think, honestly, I think the thing with the Mario Galaxy tokens is I don't think anyone believed us when we said that we had them.
Yeah.
Because it just was one of those things. I think that was like in the heat of the Mondo sponsorship where everyone was
people
like,
didn't know what was
I don't know what's real on this thing.
Because, God, we got so many questions if Mondo was really our sponsor.
That's funny.
Well, let's see. Because there are 144 boss battles in the game. I think I read that on your blog. Is that just numerically that's how it worked out, or is that number have like special significance somewhere?
No, we basically just the way the game plays out is if you want to play missions, you go to a big map. You know, there's a big city map, and it's you got the different territories are colored in the family's color, and you basically unlock regions as you play through the first couple missions. So we knew we wanted to do a C rank boss, a B rank boss. 2 A ranks, an S rank, and an SS rank. So those are the number of, you know, cards or characters and properties we came up with for each region. It just so happened that even number ended up being 12 times 12, and that's what it was. So
okay. It
starts with 144. The map will continue to grow. We have new cards already made. We just have not released them.
Cool.
And so basically you'll have an endless mission play that you can cruise around and play in any order you want. The cool thing is you get the card when you beat the mission, unlike most games like this where you beat the missions for really no reason at all. At least here you get rewarded at the end, and usually you're getting better cards than you have. So that's just basically how the map was laid out. So the number had no significance. It was just how it worked out when we decided how many properties to launch with.
Okay. And let's see, so the Italiano family rules the east coast of Capital City.
Correct.
And, of course, the game is called Mario Italiano. Was he just, like, the first character you came up with, or did you, like, intend, like, was that the first thing you made? Is that a good way to go through the game to play as this family, or?
Yeah, why is it named after that?
That one boss? Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good question. I ask that pretty consistently by most people that I know, but basically it's just because that's what the comic was called, you know. Okay. That was the first guy I drew that made me want to do this mobster comic. I remember I was at work working some crap job, and I was really young, and I'm sitting in the break room sketching as I always did, and I came up with this little mobster dude, and I ended up calling him Mario Italiano, and that's when I approached John, and, you know, when I'd see him all the time and be like, hey, I want to make this mobster comic. Would you want to help me? You know, like, here's all the drawings, here's some of the concepts, here's some of the characters, but I want to have a lot of characters. So then we started with him. The next character, we knew we had to create, you know, an arch enemy, you know, we had to have a bad guy. So then we did, I came up with Stinky Joe Elbow. So Stinky Joe was, you know, we didn't have East Side, South Side at that point. We just knew that was going to be the rival. So then the more we drew, we ended up coming up with these other two bosses, and we just decided, okay, we'll have four families. Why have two? You know, why have one or two? We'll just have four because we've got these four different things made. So the reason the game's called Mario Italiano is solely because that was how the comic was started. That's what it was based on. It was all based around that family, and everybody else was just kind of there, you know, to tell the story. Once we started developing the game, we knew that if we were going to make four families, you know, just for the sake of the game working out, we had to make them all their own thing a little bit stronger than just being a supporting, you know, a supporting characters. So that's when we started developing them out, you know. And when we say 3 years spent, a lot of that time, you know, or a good portion of that time was us creating new characters, redeveloping the story, figuring out how everybody was going to fit in, and really coming up with all of that too. That was part of it.
So the comic itself, was that something that was self-published? Was like that like an indie comic, or did you do like a web comic? My real question is, if I wanted to read any of this stuff, could I?
Yeah, absolutely. John's done an awesome job of putting it digitally on our website. In fact, you could actually see two issues right now. They're rather old, but we're working on new ones. So.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's really cool.
When we were, like, you know, developing this when we were younger, we were pretty heavily into it, and we actually did a lot more surrounding, like, the lore than we did around the actual making of the comic itself. I mean, we would spend Michael had notebook upon notebook where we would come up with different ideas for, like, kind of, like, rules for, like, this guy who had beef with this guy, and, you know, we would come up with these little, like, sub storylines so that we could make the comics kind of write themselves, because we were trying to be, like, character focused, and so a lot of that we developed. But once we started talking about making the game, we realized, like, even with the large amount of characters we had, we vastly needed to add to this world, because we needed to have enough, you know, cards just to kind of fill it. So you know, there was a lot on this end of things as well, where we had to kind of add to the lore and, you know, make new characters and things like that.
See, I really love that it's something that started when you were younger and just built in your minds, and you were able to translate this thing that you'd come up with, translate it into a game. That's kind of the dream of every, like, artist/creative/gamer, to do what you've done right there.
Because, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, Tyler, I think you did the same thing. Probably every kid who shares our mentality would draw out Super Mario Brothers maps.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, I spent so many school days just doing that. Mm-hmm. And which is why I'm super excited about, that's the reason I'm going to get a Wii U, so I get Mario Maker and like do this thing that
pull out all your elementary school drawings and actually make them
which,
play through.
Which my mom might have, and if she does,
that's awesome.
I totally think, I think that would be a bigger dream come true than us making this game.
I don't know.
So, were you guys both like into like mobster movies? Is there something that attracted you toward this genre exactly? Did you just think that was cool, or?
I don't know about John.
Let me just say, so in all of this, like, yeah, a lot of this is like kind of me along for the ride. I like drawing and I like weird shit. And, you know, Michael, a good way to kind of explain our drawing styles, especially at the time where we started this, I would like, Michael liked to have, like, basically have me around to help just create off the wall characters. You know, like, he just wanted that kind of like weird side of things. And I would say it, my art at the time was a lot less tamed than Michael was. Not that most of it because I was not nearly as skilled as Michael's was, like, when we were younger. But, you know, it was really his concept. He was really into, you know, that mobster stuff. And I just kind of, you know, have contributed along the way, you know. But it's really been his driving force, both for making the comic and then also for, you know, making this type of game. Because I didn't even play games like this. I didn't even know this was a type of game when Michael brought it up to me. And it actually took me a good, I'd say like a year before I even really, like working on this game, before I really started to even get into it and understand it, which is actually kind of surprising because in actuality, it's very much like an RPG. Which I love RPGs. That's mostly what I play. And, you know, trying to relate it to these card games, you know, realizing it was an RPG eventually is what made me kind of, you know, become attached to it. Because I'm like, okay, there is a story. You know, there is, you know, there is lore. There is something for me to become attached to. There is, you know, it's just I wasn't used to having this medium of, like, story written out on cards and, you know, as opposed to, like, you know, playing a character on the screen. So, you know, he really took Michael a lot to sell me the vision for this type of game and to convince me that games like this work. You know, it really took me a little while to really see it. But, you know, Michael saw it and I commend him because I think that the comic book and our story goes perfect for this type of game.
What kind of comics were you guys into? I know you were fans of comics. Was there anything in particular that that you really liked, that you were drawn to when you were younger, and I guess even today?
For me, and, you know, in the comic community, I'm sure they probably look at me like a weirdo for this. I know there's certain people that do this, but I follow artists.
Yeah.
Like, I will seriously pick up a story. I will pick up a book that I've never read.
Yeah.
Have no idea what's going on. And buy the next 10 issues of it because Chris Pacello's, you know, doing the artwork.
Yep.
Like, oh, sweet. I'm going to grab this. I will buy a trade paperback if he has 3 issues in it that I can't get elsewhere. And then I'll end up reading the story. Once in a while, a writer will grab me and I'll deal with an artist that I don't really like or don't think is that good, you know, and I'll read the rest of it just to find out what happened. But for me, I go into the comic store and I look up artists or I'll follow artists' blogs and figure out, okay, they're going to be doing this series. I'm going to buy those until he stops drawing it, you know. And for me, I have a lot of knowledge of bits and pieces of the comic book world, of all the series, because I'm following the artist from one book to the next to the next. And unfortunately, the way it works with, you know, the big guys like Marvel and DC, and even, you know, the only way you're going to get consistent art is in something like creator owns like Image Comics. But those guys they float them around from different book to different book so often that it's like, it's hard to stay with a series for me. So I know that that's a kind of a half-assed answer to your question, you know, but I could look at my collection and it would probably make no sense to most collectors because it jumps from here to there, and I'm basically following my favorite artists, and I'm reading this stuff to gain inspiration is what I'm doing.
Sure. No, I get it. I do the same thing. Like when I hook into like a creative team that I really like, I will follow them, even to the point where like cover artists, because I love Dave Johnson. So if Dave Johnson does like a weird comic cover, sure, that I'm really not interested in the book at all, I usually pick it up just so that I've got that book.
Yeah, when you're
not alone,
that,
man. I bought the Pet Avengers last week because Roberto Ramos did the cover. Like, man, it's terrible. Whatever, man. I got that cover.
No, you were saying that. I was like, Dave's going to get this. Dave is going to totally understand this.
I was sitting here like nodding, like excited the whole time you're talking. Yeah. No. I'm with you.
That's cool.
Yeah, I wasn't quite as into, like, I loved looking at comics when I was a kid, but I've never been a reader of comics. I liked comic strips.
Now I'm nodding along. Now I get it.
Well, let me tell you, I like, I was a big fan of Garfield growing up. I liked U.S. Acres, which is a,
we're familiar.
Yeah.
Yep. Sheldon.
Yes. Yeah. So I like
Roy the Rooster.
I like Popeye strips. I liked Windsor McKay, Little Nemo.
Hell yeah.
But the artists that I really liked more of like, some of the kind of the outliers, like Robert Crumb was definitely my most influential artist. He made Mr. Natural.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Keith, who did the Max. Frank Miller, Ralph Bakshi, John Kay, the guy who did Ren and Stimpy. I like Jim Mafu, who did the Clerks comics. Rob Schraub, who did Scud the Disposable Assassin.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
You swooned Jacob pretty hard by saying that.
Yeah, that was a good team up.
Well, he actually, he's from Milwaukee, Rob Schraub is. You know, now he's a director. I mean, I know he's directed a couple of episodes of Community.
Yeah, which makes sense because Dan Harmon.
Yeah, because he's good friends with Dan Harmon, who's also from Milwaukee. So, but yeah, I liked all that kind of fringe stuff. Robert Crumb, though, I will say was by far like, When I was into comics, that's pretty much what I looked at.
Yeah.
I liked Robert Crumb a lot. And then everybody else was kind of like, just kind of there.
Yeah, Crumb is kind of hard for people to swallow. Like if you don't, I don't know. I feel like Crumb is like one of he's a transcendent artist because that's a tough one to sell somebody who you want to read independent comics. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I totally know what you mean.
He's a tough sell, but
you gotta realize though. I mean, when you discover it as a teenager, I mean, how I discovered Robert Crumb was because at the video store growing up, there was always that Fritz the Cat in the adult section that was rated NC-17, which was, Bakshi did the animation, but it was based off of Robert Crumb's Fritz the Cat, and I wanted to rent that video so bad. And then I found out about Crumb through that, and I was just like, I think that whole like kind of like off limits thing about Crumb's work is what made me really, really like him.
Yeah.
Who was the artist for Bone, like that comic, the one you love, Dave?
Smith did all of that. I think he wrote and was the artist.
Okay, so that was that's the first thing. Like, now I'm on the outside of this whole conversation. Remember, because Dave, you're like, this is really good. You should read this. I remember you gave it to me and I opened it up, and immediate disconnect.
Yeah,
and I think that's like the first time I've ever like had that like, I don't know, to like an artist.
Yeah, what didn't you? what I like about it is it's kind of got this. You guys obviously are going to be more knowledgeable about this than I am, but like it reminded me of like the Belgian comic style of like Tintin and stuff like that, where you've got like these really detailed backgrounds and you've got these really detailed backgrounds to the panels, and then the characters are all very stylized. Mm-hmm. So, and it's very clean, super clean.
Yeah.
I never really read Bone very much, man. There's a lot of issues of that. There's a breadth of work there.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. We have a nephew, John, that's
my nephew
in love with that stuff, and my daughter reads it, but I've actually honestly can say I've never read it, but I do like the art style. I have some of the toys.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm a fan.
I also really liked, as far as comics I actually like to read, I really liked Jamie Hewlett, Tank Girl stuff.
Oh yeah.
Tank Girl was, you know, that was also probably up there with Crumb. That was my love after Crumb was Tank Girl. I was obsessed.
I've heard that name so many times over the course of my life, but I have no idea anything about Tank Girl whatsoever.
Really? Oh, well, you know the Gorillaz, the band The Gorillaz?
Yes.
Well, the same artist that drew Tank Girl basically designed The Gorillaz. So okay. It's that same art style. It was just, the guy is just next level as far as his, just his fun, wacky style. I was really into punk rock growing up, which is why I connected with Tank Girl, who's got this very like punk rock persona to her.
And now I'm going to have to go and read some of the Max when I get home, because now I remember that you've mentioned.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
that was completely Michael got me into Sam Keith, because he was always much more knowledgeable of comics in general. Like, you know, he would, I wanted to draw comic strips. He wanted to draw comic books. And when we met, we kind of,
I put John in a headlock and said, no. It's comic books, dude, not comic strips.
Well, see, I had this whole...
And as you'll see, if you look at the comics, and part of the reason why the comics lay dormant for so long is, like, if you look at them, they're pretty brutal. You know, as teenagers, we found great joy in drawing, like, intense action scenes with guys getting their faces blown off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really exciting to us. You know, that was fun.
Yeah.
And kind of as I started
to get like
older,
that.
Yeah. there was a point in my life where I was kind of like starting to feel like, I don't really know if this is what I want to be drawing. So that's kind of why I think that's why Michael didn't think I was going to be so interested in doing this game is because I had kind of, walked out on him during the, our third issue of Mario Italiano when we were kids. So.
See, I've got this, because I don't know, really, I mean, I know a little bit about you, John, but really I don't know anything about you guys, but just based on this interview alone, I already have a flourishing head fiction of you guys being little, and Michael just like, fucking draw some mobsters. I like mobsters, draw mobsters. Okay. While you do that, I'm going to get with your sister. Now, why don't you, shut up.
This is not too far from the truth. Because, like I mentioned, Michael's grandma lived on our block. See, I was not a popular kid growing up. I was not popular at all. And Michael, I'm sure you remember, at one point with Ryan Thrasher, they pushed me on the ground.
Allegedly.
That, I was walking home from school, and pretty sure you called me a pushed me on the ground. And here we are.
I don't remember this at all, guys. I think this is a made-up story.
No, it's 100% accurate. But I remember the first time I saw you with my sister, I was like, oh, that's that fucker who pushed me down. But I will say, you made up for it mightily, because the first time I saw you, you had a Domino's pizza in your hand, and were like, would you like some pizza?
How do you remember this stuff, man? I don't know if I did too much recreational activity in that
time. The reason why I remember that is because on the same occasion that you gave me this pizza, you called and got the pizza for free because you told Domino's that it looked like someone barfed on your pizza. And so they delivered us free second pizzas and didn't make us give back the barf pizzas, which were actually perfectly good. And we ate, and they were delicious.
I would have loved to see the delivery guy be like, hey, I'm going to need that barf pizza back, though.
See, it's even better. It's like, no, what, you want another pizza? I'll give you another pizza. Yeah, okay, all right.
He wants the barf pizza back.
Pizzas are probably not too good. Tarnished. I had never worked in the food industry at the time. Now I know better.
Everyone should be scared to complain. Even if you didn't get it your way, it's okay. There will be another day.
That's the new BK motto, I think.
Yeah.
So it's normally in interview questions, so there are a few questions I'll still ask. So I'll put you guys each on the spot a little bit with. And it's not a blue question. Your top five video games.
Ooh, John, go ahead, man. Start that one off.
Oh man, that's hard.
They can be it can be series. Well, that's well, fine.
Clearly, Kirby's Dream Course is high on there.
It better be.
Yeah, Kirby's Dream Course is. You know, the nearest and dearest game to me, which is not really my favorite, but it's just nearest and dearest to me, was a game called Mappyland, which is based off of Mappy, that arcade game. It's a game that not a lot of people play. It's for the NES, and I love it because it's the first game I ever beat. So it holds in special place in my heart. I really like RPGs. So I grew up with a Sega Genesis, and one of my favorite RPGs is on the Sega Genesis, which is Landstalker. I don't know if you guys have ever played it.
No, I haven't.
Never heard of that.
It's done very much in the style. Like, it looks a lot like the Shining Force games, which are certainly
high. You got me. Yeah. I'm gonna write that down.
But it's got the same kind of style, but it's in an isometric view. So it's got platforming. So it's got this like pseudo 3D environment, which makes it kind of difficult. And it's the number one complaint because, like, you know, if you hit left, you're actually going diagonally. All
right.
Like, none of the controls are spot. You kind of gotta, like, when I play it, I actually hold my controller at like a 45 degree angle so I can play the game properly.
So it's kind of like Super Mario RPG a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Except it's not done quite as well.
Okay.
And the thing about it is it's action oriented versus Mario RPG, which is not quite as action oriented.
Gotcha.
So, but it's a great game. I really, really like it. Man, I love the Zelda games. Zelda games are games that I still play quite frequently.
When you crave a Zelda game, what do you turn on when you just want to play a Zelda game?
Well, it depends on when you ask me. Let me tell you, it's never Zelda 2. That's one that I was one of those kids who was put off by it growing up.
I can understand. Because
The Legend of Zelda, the first one, was one of my favorite games.
Uh-huh.
But I also, usually just the original. The original. I was contemplating the other day buying, like, a modded, because I have a PlayChoice 10, like an arcade machine.
Nice.
And I considered buying like a modded board for $200 just so I could play Zelda on my arcade machine instead of a half a foot to the left where the television is, where I could play it.
I think, I mean, Tyler and I were both kind of like, yeah, we're making that like head motion. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Because I bought Earthbound and Earthbound Beginnings for the Wii U. I'll never open those games up, but I had to buy them. I had to get them. So, I mean, I understand.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get your... I mean, I actually have... I got a card of Mother of Earthbound Zero made. So I actually have, like, a NES copy of the first Earthbound.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So that's a series. That's one that actually has a lot of nostalgia for me, too, because that was, like, one of those... Before I had this... Well, I never had the Super Nintendo growing up, but... Before anybody had the Super Nintendo, we rented a Super Nintendo and Earthbound.
Oh, man.
And spent like an entire weekend just playing it nonstop. And it came with that huge, you know, the huge guide. And, you know, it was just great. I just remember my friends and I all sitting around pouring through that huge book trying to figure our way through Earthbound.
I think it's the best guide ever made.
Oh, but hands down. Hands down. I mean, it had such thought put into it.
You can read it like a book, and I've never come across anything else like that.
And
so.
If you're Josh Nance, you can masturbate to it.
Two
pages.
There's a lady in a red swimsuit.
I'm so glad that you said that you guys rented a Super Nintendo, because I remember doing that, I think, for like my birthday one year. And the thing that I remember the most about it was like the gigantic case it came in.
Oh yeah.
Because it was
case.
It was essentially like I went to the Blockbuster and bought a rifle or something like that.
Well, let me tell you, if you want to play a good how much is that on Amazon, those things are ridiculous.
Really?
So, because I collect.
Yeah.
And, man, I would never think about buying one of those Blockbuster cases. They're like, they really go for way too much money for it just being a big plastic case with a foam insert.
John, what did Sunset Video give them to you in? Because that's where we rent them from.
It was a big gray case.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a big gray case with like a nice foam fitting.
Right.
Yeah, so like if you were like, you know, a sniper with a Nintendo.
There it is.
Tried to do that, but when like I go up there and tell Dad, like, I really want to rent this. All right, well, how much is it? Okay, well, I can do that. We'll need a $200 deposit. Nope. Yeah. Sorry. You get that Joe and Matt game for the fifth time. Go ahead. That's fine.
Oh, other games I like. I really like Grandia.
I've heard so much good stuff about that, but I've never played one.
Grandia 2 is one of my all-time favorite games. I just played through it again like a couple weeks ago. It's a great RPG. It's got one of the best battle systems of all time. Grandia is like probably one of the only games where the battle is very repetitive, like most RPGs, you know, the battle systems are pretty repetitive, but it's fun the entire time. It's just done very, very well. And then I know a game that I've called in and asked you guys if you played before is Rogue Galaxy for the PlayStation 2. It's another RPG that is just phenomenal. It pushes the PS2 to the graphical limits. It's got a great story. It's got cutscenes exactly where they need to be. It's a really fun game.
Yeah, we've got a lot of games we're going to need to check out. Because honestly, like, I played Legend of Zelda, and they're like all the other games you mentioned. I'm like, that sounds pretty cool. I haven't played it, but it sounds pretty cool.
Oh, you know, another game I really like is Kickle Cubicle for the NES. It's like a puzzle game. It's awesome. It's amazing. That's the game that, you know, because I had a Nintendo and then got rid of it or whatever. But for my 16th birthday, my good friend gave me a Nintendo, his Nintendo, with like 90 games. For my birthday.
Yeah, that's a nice haul.
Yeah, it was amazing.
How many?
And
only for a blowjob. That was it.
And then Kick a Cubicle was one of those games, and I fell in love with it.
How many games do you think you've got, John?
Yikes. Probably like 1,300, 1,400.
Whew, yeah.
Wow.
That's a nice collection.
Yeah.
It's insane, guys. It's crazy.
I'm not going to put a picture of my shelf on Tadpog now. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I have a lot of games. I really, really am into mostly like the 8 to 16-bit era, but PS2, I almost exclusively collect RPGs, and I probably have 65 RPGs for PlayStation 2. Wow.
Did not know there were that many.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. So for every system, I have like a list on my computer for every RPG for every system, because those are the ones I'm always trying to check off. So that's why I have that Earthbound Zero, because I collect all the, you know, as like the games that never hit America, the ones that were only released in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right when they get a fan translation, I'm trying to, you know, get a copy, have someone dump it onto an NES card for me, because I want to own like every RPG ever made.
I should do that with Miles Edgeworth 2. Actually get a cartridge of that fan translation that took 6 years. But
what is it?
Miles Edgeworth, the second Ace Attorney Investigations.
Starring
Miles Edgeworth 2.
So what system is that for?
It would have had to have been DS.
DS. Yeah, I think DS and like Game Boy Advance games, like that's the one that I don't have either, the Game Boy Advance Earthbound game. Never played that one, but I know like people, there's translations for those things all the time, because I think those things are pretty easy to burn too, the games.
Mike, what kind of games are you into?
Man, see, I'm the opposite of John. I have no desire to play any of that old stuff. And don't punch me in the face, because I know you guys do retro gaming too. But
we talk about modern games too.
Yeah.
Yeah. As retro as I get is like Xbox 360 and PS3. Like, I have it. You know, maybe 20 years from now, I'll be like the ultimate retro gaming collection ever, because I buy everything that's worth buying that comes out now. But it's all new games. And recently, my addiction went to Steam, and that's been a big problem.
Yeah, oh, trust me, we know.
We have that silver needle in our arm, too.
Man, I'm telling you, it's brutal. But no, I don't know, like, going through the stages, like, back to, like, N64, I've always been a big competitive or cooperative gamer.
Okay.
Like, the only games I can say that I've, like, spent a lot of time in by myself are Fallout, the Fallout series. I played Fallout 3 probably 250 hours. Yeah. I played Skyrim probably the same. You know, I played the Mass Effect series. Awesome. But I'm not pulling out like weird hidden gems. I play pretty much mainstream stuff. You know, I was a big Dreamcast fan. That was probably the most obscure I got. And I played Soul Calibur and Tony Hawk Pro Skater and all that stuff on there. Mm-hmm. You know, but back in the N64 days, it was GoldenEye and probably WCW versus NWA. I remember you could make your own characters in that game, and I used to make characters that looked like our teachers. So we would come over, and they think it's hilarious. But, but now, like what I'm playing today, probably the weirdest game is Awesome Knots. I don't know if you guys ever played that on Steam.
Tyler has.
I'm going through a alphabetical Steam challenge. So before I bought a whole bunch more games in the last two sales, I'd gotten through the A's and I was halfway through the B's. So I'd played Awesome Knots. Since the last two sales, I am now back up to the numbers. So
man, you're crazy, man. You think we don't have time. I don't know. Alphabetical challenge on Steam. Holy cow.
You'll never, Tyler, you won't be able to finish that until we stop doing this show.
Well, until I stop buying Steam games.
One or the other.
You'd have to at least put a freeze on Steam like right now to even have a chance of getting through it. You know, like you can't have any new games past this month.
What killed my Steam was Humble Bundle, because it's just I can do $1 for 6 games. That's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've got a lot of garbage on there. But yeah, I think right now my next one is 1954 Alcatraz.
Okay.
I don't know either. I don't know where I got it. I just have it, and I'll have to play it.
I have a ton of, here, I'll tell you, man, I probably have 20 Steam games I've never opened that I've just bought because they were so cheap. Like, I heard that was good. It's $2 today. I'm buying it.
This one has bad reviews, but it's 99 cents. That's fine.
Right.
That's
fine. How do you argue with that? Come on. You know, even anything under 10 bucks is like, just buy it, you know?
But, well, man. You know what I... like the problem with digital downloads is they're just too frickin' there. Like it's too it's too accessible. You know, it took me forever. Like I just got on Steam like 4 weeks ago, but I can't even open it. I can't even look at it because I just want to buy things all day long.
Yep. It's
a dopamine rush. Click, click. Yep. All right.
Exactly. And it's like I'll even be like at work and I'll be like, man. There's a sale going on. Let me see what's going on. All right, let me buy these things. And I never, like, even when I get home, I'm like, I don't install them. It's the just like, number that was of, fun.
My last job, we weren't allowed to have, like, phones out in the open. So there's no telling how many times during one of the Steam sales when I was at work, I'd have to go to the bathroom, check my Steam app, see what was up. All right, I'll buy that and that and that. All right, that's fine. All right, good. Go back to work now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, so I don't know. I'd have to say my all-time favorite series is Borderlands.
Yeah.
I love me some
fan.
Borderlands.
Yeah.
That's good.
What do you think of today, the pre-sequel?
What's that?
What do you think of the pre-sequel?
That's the
consensus I normally get.
I wouldn't say it's bad, but I wouldn't say it was like an evolution of anything they had done. You know, it wasn't as good as Borderlands 2. Story-wise and character-wise, you could tell somebody else had their hands on it. That's all I'll say.
Are you?
It wasn't bad, but you could tell it wasn't the same group of people, you know?
Are you playing the Telltale Borderlands game as well?
Or? I did play through it because I could get it on my phone, and why not? Uh-huh. I always have time to, you know, kill when I'm waiting for my kids or whatever, you know? So I played through as far as it's gotten, and it's okay. You know, again, it's nothing great, but it's okay. So, you know, I played through it. That's my problem, man. If something has a glimmer of hope and it's new, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
If it's old and it's like not, you know, I don't know if I'll ever play it, then I don't buy it. So, you know, stuff like that I'll buy. But yeah, I don't know. Going back as far as Nintendo, I'll just rattle them off. Nintendo, my favorites are probably River City Ransom and Punch Out.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys ever played River City Ransom. Love it.
Yeah.
We did an episode on River City Ransom.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Okay, cool. Yeah, then when we get to...
don't forget Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah, Super Dodgeball. Yep, I have that. I still have that game.
I've got that poster, the original poster out of the box on my fridge right now.
Yeah.
That is an awesome game. They redid that on Game Boy That was good. It was good.
I still remember have that too.
Skipping Super Nintendo, go to N64, GoldenEye, and like I said, WCW versus NWA. I play a lot of that.
AKA Teacher Fun.
Then we get up to, I don't know, PS3. I don't know if you guys have ever played Wipeout HD Remix on PS3. It was just DLC only.
I've heard of it, but no, I haven't
played it. Oh, my gosh. First of all, I have a 3D TV, and that game is 3D.
Yeah.
That's when that 3D craze came, and everybody realized it probably wasn't the coolest thing to do because it hurts your eyes so bad after 6 hours of gaming. But I didn't really care, so I've done that plenty, and that's awesome.
And now you're blind in one eye.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, it gives you a splitting headache, but it's worth it.
I had a virtual boy. I know how that goes.
But yeah, that was fun. And now, like I said, I played Fallout. That was great. Borderlands. Now, currently, I'm playing MKX and Killer Instinct, and I'm rerunning through Dirt 3.
Awesome. What do you think of MKX? I've been curious about that one, but I haven't.
Okay, here's the deal. I have that for, this is how stupid I am. Here, I have that for Xbox One, but I have a friend that I really like to game with in California that has it on Steam, so I bought it on both.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I much prefer the, and my friend would call me nuts, but I much prefer playing it on console just because the ease of play, you know.
Yeah.
For some reason, even though I know it doesn't look as good, you know, it just, it plays smooth. Everything's dialed in. It's pre-tuned. I go to my PC and I got a rifle with settings. And if the server isn't fast enough that day, I got to turn down resolutions and it just gets crazy, but it does look amazing on the PC. But I like the game personally. You know, personally, my opinion is that they took a step backwards in the art direction by trying to make the game so beautiful. The backgrounds are so detailed that they take away from the characters. The characters' texture maps, they went so crazy trying to show every pore of every, you know, sweat droplet and everything, that it doesn't have the same feel as the series has. Like, if you look at MK Complete, you know, the last one, that had such a good art direction to it, you know, and for a guy like me that's playing games a lot for the art, you know, I liked how everything, you know, the costumes were more detailed. Everything was a really solid look to it. And the new one, it seems like they went away from that just to make the graphics insane, which they are. But I think the total package has a lack of wholeness. And even though I like the game, it plays well, I actually prefer MK Complete.
Hmm. MKX is on my wish list. It hasn't reached the threshold yet, the sale threshold yet. Once it does, I'm going to buy it.
Are you talking for PC?
Yeah.
You can Google it. It's on sale right now for $9.99.
Are you shitting me?
You can get a Steam key. That's how I bought it. That's why I bought it for two systems.
All right.
But yeah, you can get it for $9.99 right now. Just Google it, MK Steam key. Otherwise, give me your email. I'll send you the link from where I bought it from.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I'll buy that tonight.
Yeah, for $10, you can't go wrong,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, the fatalities are insane. I mean, they're disgusting. They're great.
I've watched some of those. I've gone ahead and spoiled a lot of that for myself.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. That's all right. There's plenty of them. There's plenty.
I also want to point out, I don't think you're too crazy because what you've done for MK, I have done for Street Fighter 4. I've bought that game like probably 8 times. And it's like,
all right.
I bought like, here's, oh, let me buy it on the 360. Oh, what, you guys got a new version? Sure, I'll buy that. Oh, you got another version? Sure, I'll buy that. Oh, I want to play on the PC. Yeah, let me buy that too.
Yeah, I like those games too, man. Don't get me wrong. I've got 3 Mad Catz fight sticks. I've got one for Killer Instinct, one for Mortal Kombat, and one for Street Fighter.
Nice. I've got one of the Hori fight sticks. I finally bit the bullet and decided to pay some money, and I highly recommend it.
They're expensive, man. They are good, but yeah, they got all the, yeah, these are the themed ones, but yeah, they're the same thing. Yeah, they're awesome.
I feel like such a poser because it's like, man, I'm not good enough to own one of these. But
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Those games take some serious practice. I just don't have the hours to put in.
Yeah.
I would never show up at a tournament with that stick, I have fun jamming at it in my basement, you know?
No. I'm like the dentist who like goes out and buys a Lamborghini.
That's all right, man. That's all right.
Yeah, fighting games are just, that's one genre I could never get into. I played a little Mortal Kombat 3. I just can't get into them. Like, I've tried. You know, we have a pretty, right where I live in Rockford, Illinois, there's actually a really good, like, fighting game scene here. And there's, like, a, you know, pretty frequent game fighting game tournaments. And I got a lot of buddies who are really into it. And, you know, they've tried to show me, you know, why Street Fighter's awesome and how I should play it. And I just, I don't know. I can't get into it.
What's
well,
the...
you liked Marvel vs. Capcom 2, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the best.
Yeah, I have that on Dreamcast. And that's one that I will actually play because you're talking about art direction. That is one of the most beautiful games ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
So it keeps me going just because I love watching it. Yep. I was like, this is awesome.
Plus, who doesn't?
And the best character select music ever, right?
Yeah, who doesn't want to get taken for a ride? this is totally off topic, but I do want to mention it because I think it's interesting. And we are talking about fighting games. Rhythm Master Paul Korn mentioned a new fighting game that's, I think, going in alpha really soon. It might even be going into beta, called Rising Thunder. Have you guys heard of this?
No,
but I'm writing it down right now.
Yeah, check it out because it is what someone has done is they used to be on like the Street Fighter team, and they decided that they wanted to make a fighting game that was more strategy and less button inputs. Tyler, I was thinking about you because it's like
this does sound better.
they do. It's all revolving around like building out a different kit. Like each character has different skills that you can choose. Their skills aren't set, but there's like and it's not really a tree. It's just you choose like, okay, I want them to have this. I want to have this. I want them to have this. And then you take them out and the buttons are assigned to that move. So instead of doing like a quarter circle forward and pressing punch, you just hit a punch button and it does it. So it's taking that barrier of entry away from fighting games.
So
they
like,
give you, yeah, that's awesome. So
is
they
this
give
like
you hack
building keys. Robots.
Yeah, they're robots. I don't know if they aesthetically change based on how you kit them out. But I mean, that would be cool.
Well, dude, the graphics on this game are insane.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm looking at it right now.
I'll post, we'll get that in the show notes in case anybody is interested. I have totally signed up for the beta and I hope I get an invite because it looks really cool.
Yeah, that looks really, really neat. If so, I like fighting games.
No, that is cool though. I mean, think about that. So the moves are on hotkeys, so they can be performed with ease, but you have to choose the moves. So therein lies the strategy.
Right. And timing them to all of a sudden, because
right.
That's my big problem in fighting games is always like, okay, I know I need to do this move right now. That's the strategy. Like, I know I need to do it, and I failed the input because I'm a scrub, and now I'm dead.
Well, it happens, man, and then the input on top of the frame timing, I mean, a game like Street Fighter doesn't really lend itself to beginners, you know? I mean,
not at all.
So we talked about what your favorite games are. What are some games that you guys remember playing and you just fucking hate?
Oh my god, let me think about that for a sec. John, I'm sure you have plenty because most of I probably made you play.
Oh, well, you know what I hated was that game Eternal Champions. Remember that game?
I vaguely remember that what sounds familiar to me.
It's a fighting game. I played it on the Sega Genesis, and really any fighting game on the Sega Genesis pretty much sucks. Because there's just not enough buttons.
Yeah.
I just remember that game, like my friends being really into it, and me being like, there was no even draw or appeal to it at all for me.
Oh, I remember this game. Yeah, I looked it up. I remember this game. Holy shit! Yeah, I totally forgot about it.
Yeah, that's one of those games that was like hot for a minute.
Yeah,
and everyone buried with history.
Do you guys remember a game called Brink? It's really not that old. It was end of 360s run.
No, I don't remember that one.
It had a really wicked art direction, and I was all excited about it.
I do.
It had this thing where this new mechanic they came up with, where you hold a button and you can vault over things and onto things, and they advertised it as a third-person shooter. That game was the biggest piece of crap I've ever played.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I was so excited, man. And it looks great. But that was
Reddit.
One game where the art couldn't hold me.
Yeah, Reddit bitches about really Brink
bad.
A lot. Because like Brink, like they built it up and they had huge pre-sales and special editions, and then everyone hated it.
I can't imagine how much money they lost on that game because of all the build-up they did. And the art was great. I mean, you look at all their promo stuff, and who wouldn't have wanted to buy this game? Yeah. It looked great, you know, and all the customization options. And then you get into it, and it was like a big empty promise. It's terrible.
Yeah. I had forgotten about that. I pulled it up, and yeah, they really did a good job with the marketing campaign, because like the first thing I remember is that very trademark like cyan they've got going on.
Yeah.
Did Bethesda
you know
do
what
that?
Game really kind of shocked me that I always like, because I really like a lot of these fringe games, you know, games that aren't necessarily on the radar. I thought I would like it. It had the great style and everything, and I waited and I wanted it and I bought it. Finally, was the Katamari series.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy because like I wanna like it. Mm-hmm. Like it's got this bizarreness to it. It's got this, but I couldn't get into it. And like
you don't like rolling around a ball.
Yeah, it just was like I don't understand why this is fun. You know, and it only lasted like 30 minutes, and I wanted to quit 5 minutes into it. I was just like, this is boring. Like, I don't understand why this is so great. And you know, it's one of those games that like holds its value and people like, and it makes a lot of lists as far as like underrated games. Yeah. And I was like, I don't think it's underrated at all.
Huh. I'm a fan. I like weird games like that.
Yeah, I love weird games. That was one that was surprising to me because still, I mean, there's been many occasions where I've just Googled like the interstitials, like the little, like, you know, like little animations and all like that kind of stuff. And I think it's funny, but the gameplay I just couldn't get into.
That's fair. I had a friend who was all about Katamari. Like I said, and I watched him. I was like, what are you doing? No, you're just rolling over stuff. And then what? No, you get more stuff on you when you roll over more. Okay. All right. It's like, it's awesome. Yeah, all right. You do that with like Silly Putty and tacks too, if you're really into it.
You need a lot of tacks. There needs to
it
be.
It looks cool. I don't know. I just couldn't get into it.
There needs to be a Katamari MMO, I think.
It's just tons of people rolling around in balls all around each other.
I'm not a big Minecraft fan either, man. My kids are like so amazing at that game, and they play it like more than I should let them. And, I can't figure it out.
Terraria was the same way for me. I mean, I couldn't wait to buy that game. That was one of the first digital games I bought. I was like, because I kind of had like this price on it. I'm like, okay, when I can get it for less than $10, I'll buy it. And I saw it. I bought it for like $6. I got a really good deal on it. But I put like maybe 2 hours into the game, and I guess I'm not really all about that type of game. You know, same thing with Minecraft, but I haven't put a lot of time into Minecraft.
Only 998 more hours in Terraria and you'll reach Josh Nance levels.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I've heard Josh talk about it before on the show. A lot of people talk about it. A lot of people really like it, and I just was kind of like, I don't understand the point. Like, I can't handle how open it is for the kind of setup it is. The fact that it's just like a 2D side-scrolling, like, it's like, it seems endless, but it's like, it's not the kind of game you want to be endless. Like, it just seems like I always feel like there's no point. Like, you know.
Yeah, I missed the boat on both of those games. I've got Terraria, and like, here's my thing is I think those games could be really fun if I was playing it with a friend. But what I found playing it alone was that I just kind of got bored, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I think if there was somebody there with me who would also just kind of dick around like I was doing, because I wasn't really doing anything important. I was just kind of like poking around, dying.
Dig. Yeah. Right. Because I wonder, I hear a lot of like adults who like retro style games are all about Terraria. And then I feel like every kid is into Minecraft like hard. Because I know one of my best friends, like her three girls are fucking obsessed with Minecraft.
Yeah. And every kid of a certain age. I mean, I mean, my nephew, he was playing this thing like, I mean, long, long, long time ago, and it was only PC. And like, I remember him showing it to me at the time, and he's like, "This is the greatest thing ever." And I was like, "This game looks terrible." Like, he's like, "This is the best game ever made." And boy, was he right! Like, it had success. Yeah. You know, I mean, it had a lot of success.
No, we both know that's Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah,
we've seen that on YouTube.
So, I'm not quite there on Banjo-Kazooie, but I think it's a pretty phenomenal game.
So I have It's hard to like make me like upset or angry. Like I have a slow boil, but John, there are two things revolving around you that have provoked this response from me. One thing is like more in defense of you, because like sadly I have not been able to play Mario Italiano because I have a Galaxy Note and an iPad, so I haven't gotten to play it yet. And I saw on your Facebook there was somebody who was just very angry it wasn't getting an Android release, very angry. And his treatment of you made me very angry. And I had to send you a private message. And it's something that I don't do. I don't, like, tell people off. But I had to message you being like, you mean tell this fucker what for? This guy needs to back off.
The funny thing is, Tyler, is you were not the only person who messaged me about the same guy. And it's just like...
Yeah, I've had enough of that dude a while ago. It's like, yeah, and, you know, now you guys know why. It's not like we like don't like Android. Yeah, don't let us have 50% of the market. We don't want to offer it to 50% of the market. Oh, yeah, morons. It's like, I just don't have the money right now.
And what really I thought was funny was the guy was like, I bought a Android pad just so I could play this game. And I was like, who the hell told you to do that?
What I love is, Tyler, like, I knew immediately who you were talking about when you said that, because I was like, I remember, like, on launch day being on there and being like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah, because you were over and I was like, this guy's a fucking dick. I mean, he's their friend and they're making this game. Support your fucking friend, man.
The funny thing is yeah, online, I'm like the exact opposite of every other person online. Like, I'm very, like, I try not to be, like, provocative in any way. I don't like to tell people off. I don't like to, I just personal message that guy and ask him nicely and blah, you know, but.
And now I feel like an asshole asking you guys earlier if you were going to do an Android release.
Oh, no, don't. Please. People need to know why. Like, we want to. We've gotten the quote. You know, as soon as we can, we will.
I mean, I did buy an Android tablet just to.
Don't feel like guilty or nothing.
We asked them when they were coming out with us, like, hey, we got them on for an interview. Weren't you fuckers doing an Android release?
And on the other line, I have the guy from.
You're a better podcaster than us. That would have been brilliant.
And then my other moment is right after Kirby's Dream Course, because, of course, I wanted to play this game, and I'm horrible at it. But we only have, like, 3 days to play the game, so I had to turn on my Game Genie in order to get infinite strokes so I could play it. So we played it through the episode, and when I checked the post, John, you rarely comment on an episode. So then when you post, I think Tyler's a little too in that Game Genie. Like, I had to scoot away from my desk. Oh.
John, I actually want to thank you for that, because that was like a personal dig against Tyler that I would use for like the next 2 weeks. And now it's revived, so that's even better. Like, Tyler would make some food or something. I'd be like, man, did you turn on Game Genie to make that?
Because I was like, I don't want to lose him as a listener, but man.
That's awesome.
Dream Course is such a fun game. Like, you got to play it with two people. It is like one of the best games to play with another person. Like, that is one of those games that, like, it's like if I have someone over, that's like one of my go-tos. Like, let's play Kirby's Dream Course.
And then you have to wake them up.
It's a fun game.
I'm just fucking with you.
Because, I mean, it'd be fun if you're...
co-op games?
What's that?
Do you guys play co-op games at all, ever?
Yeah, we do. Well, we can. Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, our schedules usually don't line up so that we can actually play co-op games together. Which is, like, one of the great things about Steam and, you know, modern games, is you don't have to, like, drive 10 minutes over to somebody's house, which wasn't a big deal 10 years ago, but now all of a sudden is a huge deal for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is tough.
It's like, is Nikki off work? Well, is Meg off work? Well, is baby in the bed? Yeah. So whenever we didn't have kids and the podcast had just started, we played basically the first 10, the bottom 100, you know, together of the SNES list, so we just go over your house and play through it and basically beat all those games.
Yeah, it's been a game changer for us with the N64 because it's like I have to switch from a mindset of, all right, let's start this game and finish it, to let me play this game until we have to record.
Yep.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because I didn't really realize until I've been listening lately how similar every platformer on the N64 is. Because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it is really true. And, you know, Conkers is one of those. That's one of those games, man. I got a sweet deal on that. I bought like a N64 full of a bag of games, and that was one of them for $10.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, and I traded that Conkers because I played it, and I was like, what is this? What's all the hype about it? I couldn't get it. I just thought it was just clunky. But I ended up trading it for a copy of Pocky and Rocky 1 and 2 for the Super Nintendo.
Nice.
So I love Pocky and Rocky 2.
Because those games have skyrocketed in value. So
yeah,
good $10 investment.
Pocky and Rocky, that was the hidden gem for me. Because I'd never heard of that until we did it on the show.
It was really good. Surprisingly, like Pocky and Rocky, I don't know what the fuck this is. Yeah. Okay, all right, I like this. This is like,
you know,
pretty good.
What's cool about those games, Pocky and Rocky, is they're like shooters.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
cleverly disguised.
It's just like a dressed up shooter. I just think it's such a clever idea.
And it honestly, as fucked up as it is to say, it makes a huge difference for me for some reason.
As long as you don't think you're in a spaceship flying around in space, it's like it's a lot. I was able to tolerate it a lot better. I wanted to keep playing it. So it's basically the same as R-Type, but I couldn't take R-Type nearly as long as Pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
We're about time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation. I know we kind of steered away from Mario Italiano a little bit. I hope you guys are okay with that.
No, that was fun.
If you'd like to take a moment to tell us where, first of all, where can we find this game online? Like, where can we find more information about Mario Italiano?
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, all right. Well, best place, I mean, here, we're obviously on all the social channels, so you could follow us on Facebook, which we post pretty much a lot of art and a lot of updates and stuff will be on there. So it's just Mario Italiano. Just look that up on Facebook. And then, I mean, we are on Twitter, but you're not going to get as good of pictures and stuff. Otherwise, go to the website, MarioItaliano.com. We've got a really cool website up there. It gives a lot of the lore. It gives you a lot of good artwork. And our comic is also posted there. So you can read it for free. In a comic book reader, you don't even have to download it. You can read it right on the site. So that's on there. And that also has links to all of our channels. So best place to go is just MarioItaliano.com. If you're on a mobile device, you can link right to the download of the game right from the mobile website, thanks to John's genius. And you can get it right from there. Otherwise, just search it out in the App Store. Like I said, we are going through a major overhaul of the game, a lot of new features and stuff coming out within the next couple months. So we're excited to keep building the world and also keep building the comic. We got new issues lined up, and in fact, I've been storyboarding one right now. So we are going to get back on the horse and get those issues online as quick as we can, too.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show, guys. I really enjoyed having you on. And I look forward to playing more Mario Italiano.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us on. It really means a lot. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, that was awesome, guys. It was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Thanks for listening, everybody. So don't miss the next episode. We'll be talking about Paper Mario. What do I normally say after this?
What do we like?
Well, I'm missing something else.
Where can you find us?
Or we're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And then the next episode's, you know, Paper Mario.
Yeah.
What we still love. It's the biggest marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
These guys understand it.
Yeah.
It's the biggest marketplace. It's where the most people are. It's the easiest to get to. You have to go to leave us a 5-star iTunes review, a written one. Helps us out a lot. Helps us get some exposure.
Yep.
While you're there, go ahead and find Mario Italiano. Give them a 5-star review. Write a review. They'll find some way to make it worth your while. I'm sure they're good for it. It's fine. John has all these games. They're just sitting there. He'll probably give you one. I'm just speculating. So we've tried to further incentivize you. So if there is a game you want us to play, if there is a guest host you want an episode, just include that in your 5-star written review. And we promise we will get to that
eventually. Don't worry, guys. Like Tyler said, we're going to be back. We are going to be talking about Paper Mario. I desperately want to break that game into two parts. We'll see how it goes because I want to finish that game. Spoilers. Until we do that, you can always find us on tadpog.com. That's where the show notes live. You can find us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/tadpog. There's a lot of cool people there doing a lot of cool shit. If you have anything to say about this episode in particular, that's a great place to let us know. Tyler will make an episode post. You can just hop on there and share your feelings about this episode. You can find us on Twitter. We are at tadpog_podcast. It's cucumbersome, I realize. Thank you for everybody who has been retweeting us. That helps get the word out about the show, and I really do appreciate it. We do have a Patreon. If you've got, like we all do, you have a big pile of money just sitting around right by your bed, under your mattress, and you need to get rid of it, you need to launder it, allegedly, you can do that by donating to our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/tadpog.
We'll order some bar pizza with it. It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for everybody who's done that already. And as always, the show is free, but we do really appreciate the people who are donating. You can call us if you want. If you'd like to give us a call, leave us a voicemail or send a text message to 270-883-2555. Try to keep your message under 3 minutes, and we'll probably play it on the show.
Yep. So I feel like I need to ask John this question.
I think he's going to nail it.
John. Our theme,
yes.
Our theme song.
Moves by Sycamore Drive.
Boom. Nailed it.
A link to that track be found?
In the show notes.
Where are they?
On tadpog.com.
All right.
There you go.
Seasoned veteran. How do you guys want to close it out?
I would say Josh Nance, but Michael doesn't know who that is. nor do I,
perfect.
But I know his voice.
I would like, I'm actually kind of curious to see how Mike thinks a guy named Josh Nance sounds like.
Well, he doesn't even know what to say. Michael hasn't even listened long enough to know what to say.
I think we could probably cut him some slack. We cut Jorge some slack.
That's
I think
true.
We could cut Michael some slack. Well, we normally close the show out by everyone simultaneously says Tropical Capricorn, which is a real big team builder around here. We normally do it after several trust exercises. So what I'm curious is, Mike, I'd like you to envision a guy named Josh Nance, and what kind of voice do you think he would have? And we'll close the show as him.
Yeah. So you gotta say Tropical Capricorn in Josh Nance's voice.
Josh Nance. Okay.
That's Josh Nance.
All right, man.
He's really gonna love this, by the way.
So until next time.
Tropical Capricorn. Pretty good.
That kind of works.
Pretty good.
That
kind
of works.
Yeah, well, it still doesn't enrage me as much as
Kirby's Dream Course.
Kirby Dream Course. I don't know how you don't think that's one of the greatest games ever made.
I've got that written out as a talking point. No worries, we'll get to it. Don't worry about it.